I think somebody said earlier that you tend to have more smooth results as you aggregate. As you disaggregate, you get more variation and noise. Well, we're gonna go to the farm level, so hold on. What we tried to do in briefly is, and I apologize for not having a credit up here to Cotton Incorporated. It is in the final report, though. Big letters. With support from Cotton Incorporated, because of the importance of the Northwestern region, Xinjiang in particular, we had been doing a number of studies over the past few years looking at the economics of cotton production in the Yellow River area and the Yangtze River area. And we've been doing that by basically taking ourselves out to the farms and sitting down with a survey, much like an enterprise budget that you'd use in extension, and trying to walk the farmers through to fill in the blanks so that we could get some comparisons, particularly for my folks back in California and for general use as well. So this is what we tried to do, was replicate that same experience in Xinjiang. It's a little bit different, a little bit more difficult. It's really the tale of two systems. You've got, on the one hand, the military production corps, which was mentioned this morning, and I'll say a lot more about it in a minute. And then you've got independent farmers who are farming cotton for the most part like they do all over China. But they coexist in the same region, and it's a very important region. So what, you know, by way of foreshadowing, we've got some background on China cotton production, the regional breakdown of it. It's highly variable and regionally concentrated. The greatest production's in a very difficult place. And the opportunities for other commodity production, we'll talk a little bit about that. I think what you come out with is that imports remain competitive, but what we've heard from others today about India in particular, I think the key for us is, as cotton economists and looking forward, is really going to be the competition that we face as importers into this market, more so than how much they got, how much they don't have, how many stocks they have. We're going to have to beat the Indians, and I'm not sure that's going to be all that easy. But we do have high quality, and we've got some street cred, so we'll go with it. Just some quick slides. In fact, I think I'll just slip over these because we've already talked about them, but it kind of shows a little bit about the variation in production and planted area over time, a little bit about China's domestic production and imports, which we've talked about, textile and apparel exports, although slowing down, they continue to increase. China's yarn production the same way. Now this is a chart that I just threw in at the last minute because there's been some talk about non-price responsiveness of cotton producers, I would suggest that we really need to take another look at that question and maybe a closer look, because if you go down and look at the seed cotton price and you look at the planted acres in cotton in China, I think you're going to find something there. These guys are outside of the production core, pretty price sensitive, pretty much moved away from what you think of in terms of central planting, and are really more market-oriented than we might want to believe. So I think there's some fruit, maybe some low-hanging fruit, in taking a look at some of these relationships. The major regions are the Yangtze River, the Yellow River, and then the Northwest region, which for the most part, all intent and purposes, is the one province, Xinjiang. And what you can see is what's happened over, this is 79 to 07, and you've got fairly stable production in the Yangtze River area. You've got variations in the Yellow River, increasingly variable as you move out into time or closer to the present system. And then you've got this steady increase in the Northwest. It started out as sort of a side business for the production corps, and it's developed into a major operation. In fact, it's the largest producing area in the country now. And the paper, we've got a lot more details, so it'll be out in just a little while, and we can sure get you a copy of that. The important thing, I think, is to put it in perspective. That cotton is about 2,500 miles from where it needs to be, for the most part. Now, put that in perspective, from Lubbock to Long Beach is 1,122 miles. You can't get cotton to Long Beach very easy from Lubbock without going back to Dallas, as I understand it. And we've got a pretty good transportation system. Now, imagine trying to move that cotton another 1,100 miles on something that's not quite as advanced as the system that we have in the States. It's a difficult row to hoe, so to speak. We've got some, there was some work done at ERS that did a real good regional comparison, and I'd urge you to take a look at this if you're interested in it. It kind of goes through some of the varieties, the BT cotton experience, the cropping patterns. It's a bit old, but it's still really useful. And I've got a reference to it in the paper. I don't think I have it on the slide. And again, this is, I don't know if it's from the same publication or a different one, but again, this, the thing to take away from here is, and I'm trying to follow my instructions, I'm supposed to use this, is the alternate crops. Out there, you're really talking about corn and wheat. In both of the other cotton producing areas, you've got a fairly robust set of alternative crops that you can go into. And you're talking about people that are farming on very small plots of land, very intensively, and I'll show you some return figures in a minute that I think can explain why you see this variation away from cotton, or at least a variation, especially in the Yellow River area. I updated some of this information, and again, it's a lot of detail, but if we can pick some stuff out, I think the important part is that they produce about 42% of all the cotton in China in Xinjiang. In the whole region, it's about 25% of the planet area, but that's because it's a big area. There's the seed subsidy that we'll talk about in a minute. BT cotton really isn't relevant for that area because they don't have the boll weevil problem, or unless somebody smuggles it in, as was suggested earlier, but I don't think that would be WTO legal. And the other important thing I think to look at is this, and this is from the GAIN report, and if you don't read the attaché reports from Beijing and you're interested in cotton, you really should. You really should, because there's a lot wealth of information. But their net returns in 08 were negative in the Yangtze Valley, about 200 U.S. dollars per hectare in the Yellow River, and about 145 in the Northwest. So you can see that it's a money-making proposition in some areas not so much. The seed subsidy, I'll talk about in a little bit, but it's about 15, that's wrong, it's 15 renminbi per mu, and there's 6 mu to an acre, so you can do the math. I think it's $32 a hectare. The unique aspect of the region, though, I think is really the military government area versus the independent farmers, and I think that's what everybody tends to focus on. The Xinjiang Production Construction Corps is a semi-military government organization. It has an independent administrative unit. It's responsible for health care, education. It has central control of the planning and operational decisions, and it controls literally about 40% of the production in the province. Now, Terry this morning, I think, used the figure 25% of the production was controlled by the military. He may be talking about corps that operate outside of this region. This is more like 16% of the total, if you do the math, and I talked to Jay, and Jay never misses the math, so he didn't call me out. But given what Carol just said, 25-16, that's pretty accurate for Chinese aggregate statistics. So we'll put it somewhere in between that. I think that number is pretty good because it's based on a number of different, it's sort of an average of a number of different sources. So let's use it for now. If you look at the national statistics, for 2008, based on an exchange rate, 6.82 renminbi per dollar, these are the regional breakdowns that we got, and these were sort of the numbers that we wanted to use as our benchmark. What we were really doing was saying, we know what the official numbers are, let's go see what the farmers tell us they are. So you come out with a net return of about $1,070 per hectare in Xinjiang. You're getting positive returns in Yangtze, positive returns in the Yellow River Valley. Total revenues, yields, and the total costs are broken down. Where you see the difference, particularly pay attention, I think, to the machine and irrigation cost and the labor cost. Those are interesting dynamics that we'll talk a little bit about if I have time. So what we did was, and I'm sorry that Fong Bin had to leave because he actually was, he and his counterpart out there were the ones that actually sat down with the farmers and talked to them. We've got a lot of information from the survey data and the field notes that's pretty interesting. But here's what we came up with. On average, and this is just a limited sample because it's all the time and resources we had to do, was to talk to a couple of producers, one in the core, or two in the core, two in the independent farmers. Similar size areas, they were growing about 4 hectares apiece. Local farmers a little bit more than that. Family size, 3 to 4 people usually. The net returns they came away with, again, it's higher in the core, about 5.21 per kilogram. The local farmer was about 4.81 per kilogram. Their yields, I converted the seed cotton based on, I think we used 31% out of the UNCTAD study. So it comes down to about 3.3 bales per acre on the core land and 2.5 bales per acre on the local farmland, if you convert it and do the math. The couple of things that jump out at you are the difference in hired labor cost. The core hires labor, and so do the local farmers at the harvest period. The core comes in and pays a little bit higher wage rate, so they've got a little bit higher cost on their labor. Producers in the core, we use the term soldier farmer in the paper because they really operate under a completely different system than the independent farmer. The core producer has no control over basically anything. He's told what to plant, when to plant, where to plant, how to plant. They have no ability to actually affect their decision one way or the other in terms of an operator. The trade-off for that is a lot of technical assistance. You've got a retirement program, so it's more like really being a soldier farmer. You don't have the luxury and the freedom of being an independent farmer, which is cherished by these people. But at the same time, you have some things available to you that you don't have from the independent farm side. A couple of those things are interest. They charge interest on half of the production cost at a rate of about 8% per annum. That there's some of that goes on in the local farm area, but it's very difficult for them to get credit. Whereas the core controls the credit and also access to chemicals and seed and everything else. They also have an insurance payment that they have to make, which isn't available to the other farmers. So you get a little bit cheaper rate on transportation to the gin. Land rent's about a little bit higher, but not much. So you've got trade-offs between the production and the core and the local farm enterprises. You've got better production in terms of yield. You got a little bit better price this year. That hasn't been the case in the past. So there's trade-offs between it. The biggest difference is, as a farmer within the core, you have no control over what you do, and that's a real big thing. Especially if we want to think about in the future where cotton's going to be and how much of it's going to be there. So what's going to happen in the future? I mean, it's like anything else we try to do. We think about relative prices. We think about changes in infrastructure or location. And we think about alternative opportunities. If you look at the seed cotton price, it's It's down from where it was, but now it recovered a little bit in September. You can get these prices from all sorts of things. I like Alibaba just because I like Alibaba. You can find anything for sale there, particularly agricultural products from China, which gives you good sort of day-to-day data. We've got other stuff from Stone and from USDA. But again, this puts things in perspective, what I was saying earlier. This is from the China Statistical Yearbook, but it's actually an ERS publication. The data came from there, where you look at where the cotton is and where they need the cotton as an input into the manufacturing process. The yarn's all being developed in Yangtze in yellow. The cotton was back in 99, kind of evenly distributed. Now, when you look at it, this is 07-08, you know, we've got 43% of the cotton out there 2,500 kilometers from where it needs to be, where you've got 77% of the yarn being produced. So you've got a major problem of getting it from where it is to where it needs to be. So how does this work? Well, China has a couple of solutions to it that are policy bound. The main one being, it's a subsidy on the transportation charge. Otherwise, you got a hard time being competitive with that cotton in the eastern provinces where they need to be. The subsidy rate is about $59 a metric ton for shipping out of Xinjiang. It's usually also made problematic by shortage in rail cars. But the subsidy does work. If you do the math, which is kind of hard to do because they changed measures on you. They start using things like fin, which causes you a bit of heartburn. But then 100 fin equal 1 won, and then you've got to convert. Bottom line, they subsidize the transportation costs almost to the penny. At least that's what it is based on the rates that we think we know. And again, it's what we think we know because we're getting it from all sorts of different areas. We don't have somewhere to go. This came from the Cotton News report out of China. And the good news is, if you look at it, we still have sort of a competitive position in the import price. You can take a look at the detail here as well. But the point I wanted to get across was that the way the Chinese government is currently dealing with this problem is simply subsidizing the cost of transporting it from where it is to where it needs to be. Now, the freedom of choice, this is, again, a lot of detail that you can take a look at your leisure, but the basic takeaway from this is that if you talk to a Yellow River farmer and you look at the subsidies that are in place for cotton, the subsidies that are in place for wheat or corn, and you do the math and you look at the yields, what you end up coming away with is the fact that cotton really results in about a 280 won per mu loss in revenue, everything else being equal. If you're a market-based grower, cotton doesn't look too good to you. Now, there's people that are, you know, that obviously they grow cotton for different reasons, but if it's just looking at a simple decision, it looks like there's at least some pressure for a reduction in the amount of cotton being produced based on these numbers in the Yellow River anyway. If you look at other cropping alternatives, again, this is some nice stuff that ERS put together. If you just look at the returns from other commodities, cotton's in there, above some, but again, think of 200 million people farming on farms no bigger than this room or a little bigger than this room, diversified. What are you going to plant? I think you're going to go to vegetables if you can, because that's where your money is, not row cropping. You can't turn a tractor. I mean, you know what I'm saying. And it's working now. We're beginning to see it. Somebody asked earlier, Fong Bin, if there was a tendency away from fiber to food. I think we may be able to say yes to that. You know, again, what we think we know is kind of supports that, because if you look at the the information that we have available to us in terms of the policy, it's really a subsidy for cotton of $32 per hectare, an agricultural input subsidy of $137 per hectare, and subsidies for purchasing agricultural machinery going to grain farmers in the form of direct subsidies. So there's policies in place that would favor a little bit of at least taking a look at your alternatives if they're available to you. In Xinjiang, they've got a lot of fixed cost investment in irrigation systems. They've got advancements in the use of, particularly in the core I'm talking about, in terms of drip irrigation technology that's contributing to their higher yields. They're really, for them to move away from cotton into something else is going to be a bit more difficult, I think. It was estimated, I think, that about 80% of the PCC planted area is under this drip system. So I think, you know, in summary, you're still going to have problems with getting that cotton out of Xinjiang. There is some talk about yarn facilities being developed out there, but then there's a problem with actually whether it's easier to move cotton or yarn based on the capacity of the rail system to handle the different products. Some would suggest cotton's easier to move out of there than it is to move yarn. I don't understand that, but that's what I've been told. But as long as you've got the subsidy, if you can fix the shortage problem, you don't really have a problem as long as you got enough money to subsidize it. So I think it's going to continue to be a major cotton producing area. It's going to be tempted with other crops, especially the independent farmers, but they really don't have the choice set that the farmers in the Yangtze and the Yellow Valley have. And the core is probably it has certain fixities in its production system and investment that'll likely make it into cotton for a long time. So you're talking about a fixity of 40% of 16% of that cotton's probably ain't going to go anywhere. It's just going to get better quality. It's going to get maybe larger area, maybe not, depending on how the economics turn out. For other folks outside of that, I think it's again going to be that the market realities will prevail. You're beginning to hear statements out of the officials at the village level, at the province level, that farmers, even in Xinjiang, should start to take a look at not planting cotton, but looking at other crops, at least be cognizant of the market demand for those crops. However, we talked about the distance ad nauseum, and you're not going to get fresh fruits and vegetables out of there into anywhere in any shape that anybody wants them. So that's where I'll end it, and I'll be happy to take questions later.
Thank you, Mickey. Thank you.